And welcome back to Zero Point Radio here on bbsradio.com, where normally you would hear the voice of Dr. Christopher Holmes opening the show. My name is Dee Nicholson. I am his new co-host, and Christopher is in a sweat lodge today. He is sweating for science, so to speak, and he may call in later on in the show to let us know whether he's gone through some kind of mystical experience, which we all hope he has because he's so into that. Anyways, today we have a rather interesting show for you. A lot of people in Canada are aware of the work of Reverend Kevin Annett. Now, Kevin is involved with the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State. He has been stumping across the country and all around the world for years now, exposing the genocide that took place in our residential schools run by the three main churches in Canada, the Anglican and Catholic and United churches, and also has hooked up with groups around the world who have suffered at the hands of church schools and clerics and all of that kind of stuff. So this has been going on for a long time, and Canadians largely, as well as Americans, and they've got their own stories south of the border, but the Canadians are largely unaware of how the conditions on reserves got so bad. And now we're hearing, oh, these remote communities, they don't have good water, they don't have good housing, they shouldn't be living up there, what's the government doing about it? And really, there are stories behind what's being done, even now in our own communities, in our own country, that are enough to curl your hair. Now, with me today will be Kevin Annett himself. He'll be joining us later in the show. He's right now on air himself doing another show and went and double-booked himself, the little bad boy. So, anyways, Kevin is going to be joining us later on. And in the meantime, we have Kevin's close advisor and longtime friend and someone who is very, very well up on all of these issues. Hails from Victoria himself. Welcome to Andrew Patterson, who is a sovereign Squamish government member and right-hand man of Kevin Annett. Welcome, Andrew.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, I'm so glad you could fill in for our errant and most popular Kevin Annett. Kevin's in demand everywhere these days, it seems.
Yes, but, yeah, I have to catch him between interviews at this stage, and that's really a measure of how this story is gaining an awful lot of attention now. Not in Canada, of course, somewhat in the United States, but mostly in Europe, in Asia now, and of course in Australia. You know, Canada is being seen in a much different light than it was even a few years ago. And you know, that's something else perhaps we can look at if we get there in the conversation today.
Well, yeah, we've got evidence coming out all over the world of how these organizations, and these are supposed to be our spiritual shepherds, ha ha ha, and they've been basically, in the case of Indigenous, but not just Indigenous, also poor white people, poor any kind of people that they can grab and pull into their system. They've been operating genocidal operations and pedophilia operations. And then, of course, I noticed a couple of months ago, I was made aware that in 2010, Pope Benedict, who fondly is referred to as Joe Rat, made his address to the Vatican, his Christmas address to the Vatican staff and the cardinals at their annual Christmas dinner. He actually said that pedophilia should be made legal. And this to me, absolutely, I mean, it absolutely is flooring to me. And he has revived a 40-year-old concordat that says that if any member of the Catholic clergy is accused of any sexual predation-type crimes, it is their obligation to cover it up.
And not only obligation, as I've read the document, and my interpretation and that of others, is it goes so far as to say that a member of the church who doesn't follow this document, I believe it's called Crimen Solicitanus, pardon me, pronunciation. Essentially says that anyone who does cooperate with the authorities and the investigation of child rape or other such crimes can be excommunicated.
Yes, it does say that. I've read it myself. And I was absolutely floored that anybody would put that in. I mean, come on, they put it in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Did they really think that nobody would ever see it?
Well, and the point being that if, in fact, this is all true, then because this is done internationally, over borders, as it were, then actually becomes a crime against humanity, according to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court.
Well, yeah, the Rome Statute does apply those principles, and furthermore, of course, they're in violation of just about every human rights standard anybody ever thought of having.
Well, that's right, and I've just mentioned the ICC. I want to be clear that I'm aware that there are, well, let's just say there are issues with the ICC in terms of whom they're willing to indict and who they won't. But that's another discussion as well. But just the same, the Rome Statute is there for all to look at, and I think that's something else we should look at in this conversation,
because
it does apply to individuals, and you see, one of the things I'll put out right now as we go through this conversation, people should know that by listening to this conversation, they will be condemned with knowledge. And by that, what I mean is once one is made aware of the crime of genocide and crimes against humanity, war crimes, and so on, one then has a legal obligation. International law, the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court is quite clear in saying this. And I draw people's attention to Article 25, specifically Section 3C in Article 25, which makes it clear that providing the means to commit genocide is a crime punishable under this statute. So in theory, one could go to jail for life for continuing to support a criminal regime. And as evidence of how serious this situation truly is, look no further than England at the moment, where there are lawyers in the High Court arguing for murder charges against civilian employees at GCHQ, the communications hub of the British military, because of their involvement in drone strikes in Pakistan where people were murdered.
Uh-huh.
And so it's starting to happen that individuals,
civilians,
are going to be facing murder charges. Well, I'm told that the United States is not a signatory to the Rome Statute.
No, they're not a signatory to the Rome Statute, but boy, they are using drones. And as far as people are concerned, as far as I'm concerned anyway,
mm-hmm.
I think people who know that this type of activity is being investigated as a war crime, as murder, as, you know, acts that are not permitted by any world standard whatsoever, I don't think anybody should care whether they signed the Rome Statute or not.
Well, and I don't think anyone should care that there's even a Rome Statute in terms of murder is murder.
Well,
and
that's
it. We don't need. But what we're saying is that because this Rome Statute is with the United Nations, then again we're all aware of issues with the United Nations. The point being, it's their own rules. They're not
mm-hmm.
following their own rules of conduct, and all we're saying is, if you would even hold yourself accountable to your own rules, you'd be in serious trouble.
Yeah, and it says
you can't run a war from a jail cell. Well, in theory,
it says in a good book I once read that you should use their own laws against them, and I think that's one of the most effective routes that we've got, is to say, look, here's the law. How are you following it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also,
because they can't argue with you. There it is. What are you going to do about it? You know, change the color of the sky. Call me when you're done.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
to the best of our knowledge,
we're
telling the truth. If we're wrong about any of it, you know, let us know. You know, because we're certainly open to sitting down and talking about all of this.
Well, you can't do anything about anything unless you know the absolute truth, and that,
sure.
of course, is why the world is in the state it's in, because yeah. enough people don't know the truth,
yeah.
which is what we're here for. That's
yeah.
what we're here for, is to, you know, shed a little light on those dark corners.
Yeah.
And this dark corner is really dark. I posted a little while ago a promotional piece sent out with all the websites to go to, and one of the things that I noticed on the front page of the ITCCS website, that is www.itccs.org, you will see pictures. It's an illustration done by David Dees, and he He's a wonderful, wonderful political artist. And he has done a piece of art that I think kind of tells it all. And there is a picture within that picture of a Native girl who I know that photo has been used before in a lot of Kevin's work. And she is a tiny, lovely little thing covered with smallpox. And when I see that, it just makes my blood boil. Because I, like many Canadians, was raised under the impression that Native people were lazy and shiftless and were prone to be alcoholics and had no business being in the cities, belonged on the reserves, were lucky to have the reserves. And this was not, you know, considered to be a racist attitude back in those days. You know, the only Indians I ever saw were drunks on Main Street in Winnipeg. And so consequently, imagine my surprise when as a young adult I started to be exposed to some of these same people that my own community had vilified all that time. And it is shocking to me to this day how little Canadians know about what reserve life is like and why it's that way and who's been doing what to whom here. And it turns out the perpetrators, by our lack of involvement and our lack of knowledge and our lack of effort, the perpetrator is us.
That's right.
That to me is just, I know it's hard to live with.
It's testimony to how effective and powerful the conditioning of Canadian minds has been. And to be fair, it's my wife who reminds me that there was a time when I didn't know. And it was only through my, in this particular case, looking for a guest for a radio show I was doing here on community radio that I connected with Kevin and started getting the complete history as opposed to the version that's taught in school and all the rest of it. So it is a testimony to the conditioning that Canadians are exposed to. That said, once we are exposed to a bit of this, it does require due diligence and some investigation. And this is where we see the separation in people, quite frankly, is those who are willing to dig in, take a look, relearn their history, because that's essentially what we have to do. We have to unlearn the version that we're taught and relearn it.
Well, this is it. We've been lied to so much in so many ways. Now, when I was speaking to you and to Kevin earlier, I was mentioning Shelley Ann Clark and how she has done such a very, very good job of exposing what happened with the Free Trade Agreement. And I was reading her book.
And a very courageous thing she's done, frankly.
Oh, very this woman has gone through, she's gone through hell for us.
Yeah, and we have a debt of honor to people like Shelley Ann Clark and Kevin Annett because they have sacrificed so much to bring this to our attention. If we don't read it, I'll give a plug for Kevin's main site for the background, which is hiddennolonger.com, and there you can watch the two-hour documentary on repentance as an introduction
and
to this.
And let me jump in here and show people, you really need to see this movie. You really need to see it. Because I'll tell you, the first time I saw it, and, you know, I don't cry all that easily, but I was watching people in that movie, like Bingo Dawson, and people who are dead now, people who have died very strange deaths since I watched it. I was sitting with tears streaming down my face to think that any community or any religious organization that I was a part of would allow anything like this to go on. It horrified me to a depth I had never experienced. And I really, really suggest that you follow the link on the bottom of the email. Go to, if you got it, and if you didn't, go to hiddennolonger.com and make sure you view Unrepentant. You must see this show. You must.
Yeah, I fully agree. And take a box of Kleenex. You'll need it.
Yeah.
And then the next thing to do is download the book that's there. It's 425 pages. My involvement in this and where it started with Kevin was once I read the book, I bought a hard copy off of Kevin and read it. And he had given a number of hard copies. They cost about $37 each to print. And he'd given a number to various university libraries across the country and so on. And they were disappearing. They were being taken off the shelves and not returned. And, you know, the budget doesn't allow for repeating that process.
Yeah.
That's when I took the book, scanned it, and put it up for all to download. We've now got close to 20,000 downloads in the year that the site has been up.
Excellent.
Which is highly encouraging. So this information is getting there. I track the downloads. Most of the downloads, like I say, are from outside of Canada. But I really feel that, Kevin's wife, Carol, has nailed this down. People think they have the right to not look.
Yeah,
because
well,
now this is up, it's available, and it's critically important that people dig into the details of this information and then do what they have to do, do what their conscience dictates.
You know, on that point that you just made, that, you know, about that Carol said, that people think they have the right not to look, she's absolutely right. She's absolutely right. You know, when I look at the overall situation of what's going on out there, never mind just Kevin's work, never mind just the one issue of the genocide against Indigenous or the maltreatment by the church, all these other issues, people are doing the same thing. They think they have the right not to look because their own lives are more important to them. Well, I can understand how important a person's life is to them. But do they not realize this is the world we're handing over to our children? This is the world we're handing over to our progeny that's going to carry on with this? This is what they're inheriting. And to my mind, to set people off on a footing where criminality is just part of a norm, this is child abuse. Are we abusing our children by allowing this thing to go on? I would say yes, we are.
Of course we are.
Yes, we are. This is child abuse. Not to tell them the truth is abuse.
Yes. To allow it to continue is abuse. To continue to pay for it is abuse. Torture and murder by proxy are still torture and murder.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is why the other day I was going to my supermarket and there's two air cadets. One of them extremely portly, and the other one extremely thin. They look like Mutt and Jeff, two cute young boys. They were very sweet, very polite, and I'm walking in there, and one of them says to me, "Do you support the Air Cadets of Canada?" "No, sir, I do not."
I thought that the militarization of children was a crime.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it ought to be, because, you know, when you get right down to it, in terms of humanity, what on earth is the military for? What is it for?
It's to keep the peace, didn't you know?
Yeah, but who's peace? I mean, I think they spell it P-I-E-C-E, as in pie, as in that's their peace, and that's what they're keeping.
Yes.
Because it doesn't have anything to do with P-E-A-C-E, does it?
No, apparently not.
No.
You know,
not in this day and age. War is peace and good is bad and, you know, everything's upside down. Welcome to backward society. But, you know, when it comes to the work that people like Kevin and you and I and many others are doing right now, it's an ungrateful task, isn't it?
Well, and that's, I think, the most extraordinary point of all of this is that it is an ungrateful task. It's extremely costly in many regards. And so that, I think, is perhaps the biggest topic of all, is why is it that way? You know, who is it? Orwell said that, you know, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Yes, yes.
You know, if we're living in that time.
Interestingly enough,
you know,
they're running the movie over and over and over again all over the States right now.
Are they?
Which I find really interesting. They're running 1984 with John Hurt. They're running it all over the place. And it's like, holy smokes, where are they getting the nerve to do this, and how come they're being allowed? Well, you know what? They're fomenting this hate.
Yeah.
They're fomenting it. You know, and I'm watching, okay, who are we demonizing this week?
Right.
Well, we're demonizing Muslims, and this really shocks me. We're splitting communities with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is a complete fake.
Well, it's beyond a fake. I think one can go as far as to say that it is another act of genocide.
Okay, just for explanation, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, for those of you who don't know, is a commission set up by the government of Canada, which is sort of a pat on the head and a who's your father to the issue of genocide of Indigenous children and the horrors and torture and rapes and everything else that went on in the residential schools. But this Truth and Reconciliation Commission is not allowing anybody to come out and name any names. So in other words, it has absolutely no intent whatsoever of righting any wrongs or obtaining justice for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't do that without all that truth.
Well, people need to go and look at the terms of reference for the TRC at trc.ca. And, of course, they're using Truth and Reconciliation as they're piggybacking off the experience in South Africa. But unlike that TRC, this one has already, the government has already exonerated the three main churches even before the thing started, so they're not going to be held accountable. There's no power to summons or subpoena. There's no power to make recommendations for criminal charges. Essentially, it's toothless, and as anyone knows with any kind of commission, it's the terms of reference that immediately establish, if you will, the validity of the commission in terms of its ability to function. And this one is so hamstrung that there are those, especially over in Belgium, some lawyers in particular, who are putting together the case that the TRC, in fact, is another act of genocide because it's effectively covering up and exonerating.
Section 25 again of the Rome Statute.
Exactly.
So that's where you go from there. Of course, this is the lawyers. This is not the ICC itself.
Absolutely. This is the, if you want to talk about the ICC, one of the issues we see is who they're willing to indict and who they want.
And isn't that fellow Ocampo, is he not the head of the ICC? Because he's come out, this guy Ocampo has come out a number of times in the past and complained, okay? He complains that his hands are somewhat tied, that, he needs certain standards of evidence and certain this and certain that. And to my mind, it looks like a big fat excuse for inaction.
Well, sure, because what one of our positions is that what is needed here, of course, is a proper criminal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that investigation is obtaining the records held by the three churches and the federal and other governments involved,
and
the Canadian military and the RCMP, if they're not already destroyed, sure. But to the extent that records were kept and ought to be available, again, a proper criminal investigation would have access to these.
Not to mention the work that Kevin and some of the elders started last year, which was to start excavating the sites where mass graves were. Now, Kevin was on a show I was doing on thatchannel.com last year, and he actually brought in bones. I held those bones in my hand, Andrew, and let me tell you, I have never had such a sick feeling in my life as holding those bones in my hand. I can't even describe to you. There are no words to tell you what I felt holding those little tiny bones, and to me, they were all, at least some of them were obviously human. I don't know what has been discovered. Some of them were tested, and they determined they couldn't tell, because the samples were degraded, et cetera, et cetera. But I can tell you that the feeling from that was just god awful. And while on the one hand, it almost seems kind of after the fact to keep harping on the past, the thing is, until we establish that these crimes did in fact occur, it was such a horror, at that point, there might be enough people to say, wait a minute, because it's like everything else. It takes a massive outcry to get anything done. Now, Kevin and the ITCCS and other groups that are aligned have been doing this work for a number of years now, and only now is it starting to get a little rubber under the wheels.
Yes, it's gaining attention. I mean, I think obviously what's triggering a lot of it is people are being forced to wake up because of what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And this is a big part of the story. And if you will, if people need a motivation to get interested in the story, think of it this way, that what's happening in Canada on the reserves is the testing ground, the experiment, the petri dish, if you will. I don't mean disrespect by this at all. It's simply what we see.
It is what it is, Andrew.
It is what it is, and now what's been practiced on the reserve is going to be practiced on everyone. For example, forced medical attention, you will no longer be able to refuse vaccination. But just a native living on a reserve in Canada, there's no power of refusal of so-called medical attention.
Yeah,
and one example.
Yeah, well, that's something I want to just add to a little bit, because I'm very aware, as many people are not aware, that while we who are not reserve Indians have the right of informed consent ensconced in all of our health law across this entire country, and in fact the informed consent law is enshrined in most national laws around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the only people in this country with no right of refusal, there's two classes, not just one. One is Native Indians on reserves because of the Indian Act of, 1947?
Mm-hmm.
And the other are the military. And we know that in the past there have been soldiers who have been drummed out of the service and given dishonorable discharges for refusing this and refusing that in terms of their health care.
Mm-hmm.
And very nasty stuff going on. But when you consider that these people who have been living on these communities that are basically the crumbs from the whole loaf that they initially had, we very whitely gave them a few crumbs, not even a slice. Did a few crumbs, and these people are suffering at the hands of a government that gives them no rights whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And Canadians think, they're protected too. No, they're not protected. They're not protected. And where do we get off allowing people to be Canadian, calling them Canadian, and not protecting them? Where do we get off allowing that? This is a question we Canadians need to ask ourselves. Where do we get off ignoring that? Where do we get the idea, as Carol Annett says, to think that we have the right not to look? Because these are the characteristics of a sick nation.
Sure.
And if you're talking about a sick nation, you're talking about the homeland of your children and your grandchildren and your great-great-grandchildren. And what are they inheriting from us? And who's to blame besides our willful ignorance? And it is willful ignorance, because the truth is out there. They always put it where we can find it, don't they?
Yeah.
This is the thing that's amazing to me. You want to hide something, hide it in plain sight. That's what they bloody well do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we fools don't even look.
And again, it's back to conditioning. People are convinced that they're powerless, or what can I do? Or
yeah, I can't fight City Hall, ha ha.
Uh-huh.
Until you go down there in massive numbers and say, excuse me, no, you won't.
Yeah.
And geez, son of a gun.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just turn around, look at B.C., 39 municipalities banning smart meters in B.C.
Yep, here we
go. And they're working on Vancouver May 1st.
Yeah.
May 1st.
Yeah.
That it goes to city council.
Yeah. Look at the HST. Sure, it's still with us in British Columbia, but the people did, in fact, vote it out. Now it's a non-binding referendum, and whether the thing actually leaves or not is
well, the government
question.
Certainly will. The people
but
come up with a non-binding resolution, and they do nothing about it.
To those who follow the
around.
Bilderberger group, and look at that. Look what happened with the premier at the time. His name is Gordon Campbell. He's now the Canadian High Commissioner in London. He was summoned to the Bilderberg meeting in Spain. In fact, it was the subject of an investigation by the Auditor General, because he used public funds to get there and back, $9,000 weekend in Spain. But to my knowledge, he is the only sitting politician to ever attend a Bilderberg session. Typically, a politician will go the year or so before they take office, as in the case of people like Paul Martin or
mm-hmm.
Stephen Harper or Barack Obama, and the list
yes,
goes on.
Harper was in Versailles. Harper was in Versailles in 2003, was elected in 2004.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, there was an election in 2003. I happened to be working for a conservative candidate, staff.
Right.
I needed the job, okay.
Sure.
Don't
sure.
pick on me. I needed the job. I wasn't conservative even then. But
hey, look, and let's be clear, we're well aware that we have angels in the system.
Some of us fall in weird spots, but
there are people waking up on the inside at a rate of knots, and that is for sure. It's happening within the CRA, for example.
I know it is. And, of course, the problem we've got in Canada is there's no whistleblower protection per se. Witness Shelley Ann Clark, who will be with us in another month.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the bottom line here is that, you know, there's a lot of people who know what's going on. They're able to do only so much, because if they don't protect themselves, then there's nobody to replace them.
That's right.
So we all have to be very, very careful these days what we say and to whom we say it. You know, the thing is, though, that it's getting so blatant where the law says one thing and the government does another. And at that point in time, we have our defense. We have our defense. There's the law. How come you're not following it? I'm confused. Please tell me.
Sure.
You know, there are ways to ask, and there are ways to share, and there are ways to talk about it. We all need to get those ways together, and we need to do it quickly.
Oh, I fully agree that one of the most powerful things that we can be doing is asking specific questions of people in these various positions.
Yes.
Hey, I've found this out. You know, I've looked up the Rome Statute. It says I'm in
yes.
big trouble if I continue to pay my taxes. Is that
yeah.
true? Is that
Explain
true?
Me this. Yes. Explain to me. You can't get in trouble for asking a question.
Isn't it the safety zone when we're asking a question? Are we not seeking to further understand our position so that we can better
exactly.
comply with the law?
Is that not our
purpose?
Yeah, exactly. So how do they argue with that? They
yeah.
have to answer the question, and
yeah.
they have to do it satisfactorily.
Yeah. And doesn't your law say that once I know about the government of Canada committing genocide, that I have an obligation, a moral obligation, a legal obligation to no longer support that? You know, are you saying that I'm immune from the Rome Statute? Is that
yeah,
your claim?
Well,
Put it in writing and sign it. Will you do that for me?
Exactly. Now, if we're immune from the Rome Statute, that's one thing. But if we signed it and we aren't immune, that's another thing.
Well, I'm just asking.
Yeah, I'm just asking. Dummy me, you know. I mean, I have the right of information, so you tell me.
Am I wrong? If I'm wrong, show me where I'm wrong.
You show me where I'm wrong. And this is precisely, I think, the approach that Kevin's been taking. And all the way along, show me where I'm wrong. If this is wrong, show me. I'm happy to know. Well, any truth seeker is going to be happy to know the truth, whether the truth goes against him or not.
Listen, there's enough defamatory information in this, you know, for people that want dirty laundry. There's enough defamatory information on itccs.org and hiddennolonger.com that there should be lawsuits clogging Canadian courts for the next 100 years against Kevin
Anderson. Oh, yeah, but they don't care.
Well, you know. You know, I mean, you know, people still in positions of authority are named as child rapists.
Exactly.
You know, I can't think of anything more defamatory, but there they are still in power, and they're not suing Kevin.
Uh-huh. Why aren't
so
they
what
suing
the hell?
Kevin? Yeah, and it's the same deal with, I don't know if you're aware of this woman, Kathy O'Brien.
No.
Kathy O'Brien was one of the Project Monarch MK Ultra sex slaves.
Okay.
And she came out and she exposed a whole lot of people, including people from the Canadian government who she named.
Sure.
And many people who are still involved in U.S. governance, many, many people. And she involves them in ways that are very, very scary to think about. Very, very scary. I know she's made a whole bunch of comments on sexual predation with pedophilia, snuff films, you name it. You name it. Not one lawsuit. Not one.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, I mean, come on, where's the Pope
yeah.
on this?
Yeah.
And
well, that's the ultimate way of selling somebody that they're wrong is you take them to court, you show them to be liars, and you take their life savings.
And I'll tell you, you know, the word's starting to get out. I'm looking at Toronto Street News, which is a street newspaper distributed here in Toronto, and it's also online. But Toronto Street News has a headline on its most recent issue, and it says, quote, and this is from an April 1st demonstration at the Catholic Church at Shooter and Bond in Toronto, and this was also a Kevin Annett venture, although Kevin was unable to be there. And the headline is this: have to diddle how many kids to become Pope? And this is a Native protester who's also a Canadian veteran, and this is what he said on the bullhorn in front of the Catholic Church. How many kids did you have to diddle to become Pope? But nobody says anything.
Yeah.
You know, why is that?
Yeah.
Is the Pope so pristine that he can stand accusations of this nature?
Well,
is that the case?
I think the obvious answer is that people in high office are compromised.
Oh, you think?
You know, that's been going on for a very long time.
Yeah.
And so the question would have to be, when did that stop being a weapon of political manipulation?
Well, you know, I find it rather interesting that what we have is we have a party system that basically works against Canadians, well, works against anybody really with a party system in government.
Mm-hmm.
But it works against Canadians in that Canadians think that if they vote one party out and vote another party in, they're getting, you know, another, as Tommy Douglas put it, another color of mouse.
Yeah.
And or another color of cat, and thinking that, you know, these cats are going to be different.
Well, if people haven't figured out, and obviously a lot of people haven't, but if people haven't figured out that that's all just theater to keep us amused, let's refer everyone to Baroness Margaret Thatcher. I had the privilege of living in the UK all three times she was elected, and it was quite a an education in the difference between Canada and the UK when it comes to political
interest. I would imagine so.
Just, you know, that said, after
and they
she...
make movies about her.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And,
oh, yeah.
But after she was defeated, she went on a speaking tour called the New World Order Tour. And she spoke at Matthew Hall in Toronto. And she talked about how when prime ministers and presidents leave public office, that they don't stop working, that they simply join the parallel government that's been running the show for well over 100 years because democracy is too slow. And so one has to ask oneself, if that was a lie, then why would she travel the world, other than, of course, the money, to talk about that? I mean, goodness, that's quite a claim. And I happen to believe her.
Well, see, isn't it interesting that we started hearing about New World Order back in 91.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I mean, overtly, and that was George Bush the First,
mm-hmm.
who I had the dubious privilege of meeting at the White House.
Oh, really?
Another activism role of mine, which was anti-drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
And I witnessed this, people. This is Dee was in the room when it happened in the press briefing room at the White House. And President Bush the First declared drunk driving to be a national crisis at 11 o'clock in the morning, and by 2 p.m. it hadn't happened. Like, the event just disappeared from the calendar.
Uh-huh.
Never happened. And who was involved at that time? Well, guess who was in the room? Senator Mitch McConnell. Another running mate possibility. Another guy touted to have presidential qualities. Senator Mitch McConnell was in the room at the time. He, too, participated in the shutdown on that information. And why? Because, well, 6% of the population buys more than 50% of the alcohol sold.
Mm-hmm.
That means somebody's drinking a whole lot of beer on my behalf, because I don't drink. But, you know, they know they make more than 50% of their profit off 6% of the population. They got no vested interest whatsoever in reducing drunkenness.
Mm-hmm.
So the alcohol industry reared its ugly head, and within a matter of hours, the whole thing was wiped off the calendar. And that is exactly what happens with everything that occurs. These guys in power are puppets.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They're run by corporations, multinational corporations, who in turn are run by the banks.
Yeah.
And everything goes back to the banks.
Yep.
And everything goes back to those 13 original families, and everything goes back to the Rothschild name.
Yeah.
And the Masons and the secret societies, all of which are interlinked.
Yeah, we're talking about our own backyard. North America is a Rockefeller plantation.
Well, absolutely. It always has been.
Sure.
I mean, John Dee started the oil and gas cartel. He had that all finished by 1897, and then he started on the medical cartel.
Yeah.
And the medical cartel, as we see, is completely locked down. There is no innovation in medicine except what pharma dictates.
Yeah.
And, it's just getting ridiculous. And then you see this lab rat experiment that we were talking about with, the reserves and the native community that is so locked down and absolute no right of refusal to anything.
Mm-hmm.
They want to transplant your kidney, they're going to do it.
Well, I'm told that in 1948, South Africa, the government of South Africa sent a delegation to Ottawa to study the Indian Act and use that as a template for creating apartheid in South Africa.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. And
no,
most Canadians don't know we did have a lot of slavery going on in this country.
Well, I would argue we still do.
Well, I would argue that we still do too, although the terms of reference are slightly different.
No.
You know, when I'm talking about slaves, I'm talking about open ownership of slaves. We had it here.
Look, if Canadians want to ignore the whole question, what we're talking about, just look at a system where you have a low population and huge resources. Why are Canadians paying taxes when you see other countries in the past, Brunei, Libya, who have the reverse of, or had the reverse of an income tax? They're sharing in the profit of the resources.
Well, look at Libya.
Libya is a prime example. I mean, here's a story. You've probably heard of a little group called Amnesty International.
Oh, a little group, yes.
Yeah, well, they were on their website run a poll, and they were seeking votes for Freedom Fighter for 2011, and they had to close it early and shut it down because Muammar Gaddafi was getting more votes than everybody else combined.
Absolutely, and he was up for a UN Humanitarian Award just before they started demonizing him as this nasty-ass leader. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in the meantime, Libyans were enjoying a standard of living that Canadians can only aspire to.
17-cent-a-liter gasoline, free residential electricity, buy a new car, get half the money back. That's a reverse tax. That's called a 50% reverse tax, people, versus what do we pay in taxes here. Water.
Oh, my God. Yes, let's do talk about water. The great man-made river project, which is now bombed into oblivion, along with the factories to make the pipe tiles to fix it.
Yeah, and that's called humanitarian aid. Cutting off the water supply to a couple of million people is...
Yeah.
And just so Canadians know, and Americans, NATO led the charge, and leading NATO was General Charlie Bouchard, and 350 of his fellow Canadians. Canadians are the management class in these affairs, and they went in and directed the bombing sorties and all the rest of it. And so Canadians are right at the heart of making this happen.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So there's another example of current-day Canadian-managed genocide.
Yes, Canadian-managed genocide, and there's more and more of it, and there's more and more involvement militarily. Harper's the guy who got us deeply embedded in the American military-industrial complex. Thanks a lot, Stevie boy.
Well,
and
let's just look at that for a second, because I don't watch a lot of television, but I happened to watch the CBC News the other night for some reason. And it was interesting. The righty-lefty guys were actually both looked quite astonished. They were discussing the robocall and F-35 scandals in Canada.
Yes.
Quickly, for people who don't know, the biggest election fraud scandal in Canadian history, that's not my saying that, that's what commentators are saying about it, where it's quite obvious that this last election was bought and paid for by using a calling method telling supporters of other parties that their polling station had closed and they had to go to another one across town and trying to swing the vote, and it looks like they succeeded. That's the analysis. There's that going on, then a $10 billion overrun on buying these new fighters, and it's just a clerical error. You would think Canadians or anyone, you know, subject to this level of abuse would be saying, that's it, you're out. At the very least, call another general election. You know, even people, you know, duped into the theater of democracy would be saying, hang on, this is beyond the pale. There's nothing. There's nothing. Nobody cares. And
exactly.
So what? That's why they're bringing out 1984. They're already showing, you know, Al-Qaeda, for example, the enemy in Afghanistan, but the ally in Libya.
Uh-huh.
Wait a minute. Our enemy is our friend. In one country, yeah. We're killing them. The other side, you know, they're with our troops.
Yeah, and how
the
is
cognitive
it, did
dissonance
the,
required to accept that fact is just...
Yeah, this is like a total non sequitur, and everybody's going, oh, there's nothing wrong. Go back to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it blew me away because 2 weeks after they start this so-called no-fly zone in Libya, and this is 2 weeks of so-called support to the so-called rebels, which represented maybe 1% or 1.5%, all of whom are fundamentalist Islamists, who are the very ones that we're fighting against in Afghanistan and Iraq, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They all of a sudden have a sanctioned by the IMF central bank, but they don't have a country to put it in. They have the bank anyway, called the Central Bank of Benghazi. Okay, it's sanctioned by the IMF. It blows out of the water all of Gaddafi's aims to set the entire continent of Africa on a gold-backed dinar system,
yes.
Which would have blown out of the water the fiat money system everywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they weren't going to tolerate that. But, gee, I found it real interesting that the bank was the first damn thing they set up.
Yeah.
That was the first thing they set up.
Well, that's the not-so-funny joke, you know, making the world safe for central banking.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I read a good one the other day that said, what was it? Now, let me look it up while we talk here, because this is another gem out of Toronto Street News. It was real cute. It's on their cartoon page, actually. They have some really good cartoons in this paper. And it says, where is it? Okay. All Americans must wash their hands of their moral responsibility to demand peace, truth, justice, and compassion from their government before returning to the same old tired bullshit.
Well, it's one of the most interesting parts of the conditioning, again,
and
is that people feel
one.
That they're not self-responsible. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and this is another one. Give a man a gun and he can rob a bank. Give a man a bank and he can rob the world.
Yeah, I love that one. Classic.
And that's essentially, this is what we're dealing with here, is we are dealing with a system that does nothing but create money for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then has us pay debts back that we can't pay because of compound interest,
yeah.
Which Einstein said was the most evil thing on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I ain't arguing with Einstein this week, thanks.
Well, you know, if you like, one of the things I've done in the past is some ecological modeling. And I introduced, just for the sake of interest, the concept of interest into the model. A long story, very short here. Interest kills the ecosystem. The higher the rate of interest, the quicker it kills, and compound kills most quickly. And so that's why we're warned against the fake concept, the false concept of interest. It will destroy any system.
Well, you know
it
what?
Will.
I got a point of interest that you might want to tell people to consider. I know I try and tell people to consider it. But consider compound interest, okay? Or interest, as a matter of fact, for on any money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, does not the universe work according to like every religion in the planet has in it the golden rule? Like, don't do to your brother what you don't want your brother to do to him, because he will,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's as you sow, so shall you reap.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the law of karma that predates the Bible by thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And everything says if you put it out, it comes back to you.
Yes.
Well, if we only lived by that one rule, we wouldn't need any government. We'd be doing teamwork everywhere, because that's what we would want our brother to do for us.
Well, that's ultimately the question we have to ask. Do we want to be governed by another, or do we want to be self-governing?
Yeah, and who is this guy who claims to be smarter than us?
Sure, because this is one of the things we see. This, you know, term full spectrum dominance actually means something. So, for example, we see the Venus Project being promoted by the Zeitgeist movement. Looks to me that's like rehashed technocracy, that somehow there's this magical class of scientists and bureaucrats who have our best interests at heart who can tell us what we need to do to live.
Yeah,
you've got to be kidding me.
Well,
talk about your blind faith.
Yeah, no kidding. And not only that, I have to point out that there's not been a system devised by humanity aside from the longhouse form of government, okay, which was supposed to be modeled in the United States, and now, of course, it's all shot to hell. But, you know, this was the actual true democracy that was modeled by the longhouse form of government, which, of course, our governments went to great lengths to disestablish.
Of course.
Because it was the only one that actually involved true democracy, i.e. everyone in that community knows all the same facts, and then they decide.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest things that is going on right now, did you notice this MP in the last week or so? His name's Heyer, and he's an NDP guy. And he actually quit the NDP caucus last week on the grounds of not being allowed to vote the way his constituents wanted him to vote.
Good for him.
And that's what we all said that heard about it. I went, holy smokes, look at the integrity. I thought it was dead.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was dead. But this is the problem, that we have a government right now that doesn't listen to any of us. And we have people who are in government who aren't listened to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the fact that we have literally a secret society running this country from back rooms, from the Privy Council on down, I mean, we have no ability to influence, as people, anything. And quite frankly, when I see all the information that is being given out by people like Kevin and Shelley Ann Clark, when I see what my country that I grew up in, is actually doing in my name, you know, I got boiling blood right now.
Good.
My blood is boiling because how dare you take a free land and con us about it and make us all unfree? How dare you do that? And how dare you start with innocent people who welcomed colonials? They didn't make war on them.
Yeah.
They welcomed them. Yeah. Indian wars did not start until it was very apparent that the white man was coming in to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did not start.
Yeah.
And this is what people do not, we fail to recognize that they were here first.
Yeah.
They
are the first
nations.
Yeah.
It's very simple. We invaded their land, took it over, and now treat them like they're the scum of the earth.
Yeah.
And where do we get off doing that? How dare we call ourselves human while doing that? I mean, I'm horrendously ashamed. Horrendously ashamed. And I wasn't even there.
Yeah.
You know?
No, this is the point that people don't get. They say it all happened in the past. Yeah, but we're deriving the benefit. What's the purpose of genocide? That's what, ask anyone, what's the purpose of genocide? If I had to put it in one word, I would say it's theft.
Of course it is. It's always theft. So if we are deriving in some fashion, or we are permitting in some fashion, mm-hmm. people to profit from the death and suffering of other people, then we are suborning murder.
Mm-hmm.
We are suborning genocide. We are complicit in these acts. And no mm-hmm. matter how we slice it, these are things we got to answer to,
yeah.
to our own God, and
yeah.
people don't think about it.
Well, you know, that's the question for those of us who feel we're going to be held accountable at some point, even if that simply means, as you say, it all comes back to us and we have to relive the horrors for which we're responsible. Isn't that enough? You know, is you know, can you not hear your conscience screaming?
Well, I mean, I quite frankly, I think that people have such selective hearing these days because they're overwhelmed. Their own lives
sure.
are overwhelming.
Sure.
And, of course, every time they turn around, you know, they're being either prevented or restricted or directed or confronted or forced to conform in some way or another. And rather than fight back because they're trying mm-hmm. to struggle through their own lives.
Sure.
They you know, immerse their head in the platitude. That's just the way it is. My own daughter, when I pointed some of these things out to her one of them got it. One of my daughters got it. The other one said, oh, Mom, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
You can accept that, can you?
Yeah. It's part of the conditioning. That's just the way it is. There's nothing I can do. I'm powerless. I'm feeble. I'm useless. I'm... You know, doesn't express in those words necessarily, or you know, the other one is that there are people in place to deal with this. It's not my responsibility.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's police and prosecutors and stuff, and you know that's their job.
And then we look at Iceland.
Then we look at Iceland.
A place that I can't imagine anybody really wanting to go and live unless they're totally into 6 months daylight, 24/7. And northern lights and really cold weather, I can't imagine why anyone would want to live there, but these people are the only sovereign nation on the planet.
Absolutely true. What Iceland has demonstrated is possible over the last 3 to 4 years is simply astonishing. And part of it, of course, is that they are a tight island nation. They have a population of about 300,000 people. And as you say, there probably hasn't been an awful lot of immigration to the island over the last few centuries.
No, so they've had the opportunity to get smart. They're insular.
Yeah.
Their information is going to travel very quickly because it doesn't have far to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas in a country of 35 million people like Canada, or 330 million like the United States, things take a while to get around, even if they do go viral. And what goes viral is the miles per hour thing. You're laughing already. I know you saw it. 6.5 million people saw that video.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually tuned into it. That doesn't mean that they weren't emailed it or had it embedded or whatever. I mean, it's unbelievable. We will pay attention to stuff that means nothing and pay no attention to stuff that means everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, how backwards is that?
Oh, it's quite astonishing to watch to out in the world.
Yeah. You know, and one of the things you and I talked earlier about, you know, the things that Shelley-Ann Clark has exposed in her book, and to do with the, and this is only a piece of what she exposes, but she's talking about the Grand Canal Project.
Yes.
For those people who do not know what this project intends to do, they intend to dike off the mouth of James Bay, where it enters Hudson Bay, to prevent the watershed, the freshwater watershed coming off the James Bay aquifer, from reaching Hudson Bay, where it would quickly be mixed with salt water and be undrinkable. Then they are reversing the flow of that water through a series of many, many dams and shipping it south to the States. And as Shelley pointed out, Mulroney sold this to the people basically saying, oh, no, the only water that's on the table is contained water. And people thought, okay, bottled water. Well, so they want to buy some water to sell it in the States in bottles. Okay, no biggie. Okay, Turns out the Americans regard contained water as water that's been dammed up. It's also contained. It's not flowing.
Yeah.
Right? So you look at the tie-in, there are two dams to be built on the Attawapiskat River. Well, guess what? That's where they've had all these flooding problems and housing problems, at Attawapiskat.
Where there's absolutely no money available to help people out in dire need.
Exactly. Now, what also do we have at Attawapiskat? We have the De Beers Corporation, which got in there with nice agreements with the tribe. They were going to reap all kinds of money and they were going to have all kinds of jobs. Turns out the only jobs they offered them were like cleaning up, like janitorial services or waiting on tables. And this is the De Beers Mining Corporation, the same De Beers Mining Corporation that operated in apartheid South Africa, is now digging up diamonds on the Attawapiskat Reserve Area. The people are getting next to no benefit out of it, and the Grand Canal Project isn't set to start until 2016, which means that De Beers has plenty of time to take their damn diamonds out of reserve lands with no benefits to the natives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Before the Grand Canal floods the entire area. And in the meantime, the government's saying, well, you know, we can't do much about your water purity, and we can't help you there with the flooding, but we can relocate you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can relocate. In other words, they're going to pick up a whole community out of dozens and dozens and dozens of communities that are up in that region that is covered all the way from the Manitoba border into Quebec. And then you see the name Morris Strong affiliated with Quebec Hydro.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you see that there are indigenous tribes all the way up Ungava Bay, James Bay. There's indigenous reserves up there because the Canadian government scattered them all over the place so that they would be remote and they would be vulnerable and they would be inaccessible and mm-hmm. they wouldn't be able to band together and they wouldn't be able to communicate with each other.
Yeah.
You know.
And then do your best to compromise their health and make sure you occupy all their time with survival. And
yeah, they've vaccinated
you know,
the living health out of them, and they've got
yeah.
health problems on reserves. They're not just, it's not alcohol and drugs and sniffing glue and drinking radiator fluid.
Well, in our models, those are symptoms of an underlying cause. And
well, of course they are.
Shouldn't we apply the same model for these people and say these
and
are symptoms of an underlying cause? Of course it is.
Of course.
Just
I mean,
symptoms,
interestingly enough, one of the diseases that is prevalent among natives is diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And diabetes, of course, is from poor diet. It's a disease of the knife and fork. But interestingly enough, in terms of the body-mind connection, diabetes means there's no sweetness in my life. And when do I get my turn?
Yeah.
So there's bitterness.
Well, tuberculosis, one of the great killers of Indians in the Indian residential school system, the incidence, according to Health Canada website statistics, is still 20, 30, 40 times that of the white population.
Absolutely, because what do they get? They get the wrong treatment. They feed
mm-hmm.
them toxic drugs. They don't tell them, you know what, if you eat the right diet, that'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can recall when I was in school, TB was quite prevalent. It was around all over the place, and we all used to get tested in school for TB exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we learned at the time was, hey, if you had TB, you went to a sanitarium where they would, you know, keep you in sterile surroundings and feed you a good diet, and you'd be there for a few months, and then you'd be done.
Mm-hmm. That's right, and you were kept isolated. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But they haven't done that with the natives.
Well, they did the opposite in the residential schools. Going back to that, there is overwhelming evidence to show that healthy so-called students, I'd rather call them inmates, were forced into accommodation with children who already had the infection, had tuberculosis. And so, of course, the healthy children over time became sick themselves, and
of
the
course.
Death rates in these schools was as high as 50% a year.
Yeah, and of course, you look at the Mohawk residential school at Brantford,
yeah.
which they call the mush hole. Why do they call it the mush hole? Because that's what they ate, mush. Now, how many people out there listening would feed their kids mush as a regular diet? Is that a good diet for a kid, any kid?
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't raise a dog on mush.
Well, actually, you know, I would have to argue that if you're buying your food, chances are you are now buying mush.
Yeah, well, that's another issue. That's a whole other show, and I'm a health
yeah.
activist. I don't know if you know that. I should put a plug in for my own organization. I'm the executive director of the National Health Federation Canada. And as such, we're very, very concerned with health freedom issues. And what we are seeing now is the white version of what has been done to natives.
Mm-hmm.
With natives, they were hunters and they were farmers. They taught the colonials how to farm in this climate. When they first came from overseas, they taught the colonials how to farm. They taught them what would grow.
Well, I'm told here on the coast with the Squamish that the food came to them, and it wasn't unusual for people to live in excess of 200 years.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, of course, you look at the Georgia region of the USSR where the average age is 140.
Yeah.
You know, and what are they eating? Well, they're eating a good diet. They're eating a lot of yogurt. They're, you know, fermented stuff. And, of course, the native diet is vastly different.
Well,
it blows me away to see them sitting in a McDonald's these days. Blows me away. Where's your fry bread?
I'm told there's a First Nations daycare on the island here that doesn't allow food that hasn't been store-bought, that children, native children, are not allowed for example, to bring smoked salmon or anything that's off the land, and or any mushrooms, for example.
Uh-huh. And the same thing is going on in the States now. Women got into all kinds of trouble with the Department of Family Services because she sent her daughter to school with a packed lunch, and they took the lunch from the kid and forced her to eat something else because the lunch did not match the food guide. Mm-hmm. Now, in matter of fact, if you examined what was in the lunch, it actually did.
Mm-hmm.
But this kid was being forced to eat junk. And the FDA, in a court brief last year,
mm-hmm.
actually filed a document that said that Americans have no fundamental right to choose the food they eat.
Mm-hmm. That's
right. Neither do we.
No. Oh, goodness, no. We have Health Canada and health authorities who will
we
now make these decisions
Canada.
For us.
Yeah.
Well, in Canada, people are still in, and let's be clear, when we're talking about Canada, we're talking about a corporation, and it's my understanding that you're free to leave at any time. You can quit your job with IBM, you can quit your job with Canada, and considering the new rules and regs that are coming in, it seems like a very good idea to me.
Yeah, but to go where, damn it?
Oh, you don't have to go anywhere. You simply have, when you quit your job, did you move?
No, but I move buildings.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, Canada, people think it's a landmass. It, in fact, is not. I mean, think of it. I live on Vancouver Island, so-called, and the Catholic Diocese in Victoria covers all of Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make me a Catholic?
No, of course not.
No, of course not. And it's the same thing, just because, you know,
yeah.
And it's the same. And here's the point, back to asking questions. Well, if Canada isn't a corporation, then why does it file annual reports with the SEC in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, yeah. And why is it traded on the stock market?
DBA, Stephen Harper, So, again...
Well, he does call it the Harper government, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's right. And it's doing business as Stephen Harper.
I mean, we call him Harperius for a reason.
Yeah, and again, you know, people verify everything, talk about for yourselves, but this is what I found in my own investigations. And so there you go. You know, you're free to quit. You don't have to continue to work for the Corporation of Canada. It's a choice. Really it comes down to if you continue to stay, then obviously you're supporting the policies and principles of your corporation.
Well, this is the thing, you know, when I look at, and this is kind of problematic, too, when you think about it, because it's like, you know, people would rather deal with the devil they know than the devil they don't know, because at least they know what they're dealing with.
Well, I would suggest that there are so many people who benefit from having things stay the way they are. Think about it. We've got all three churches. Anyone who works for federal, provincial, or municipal government, or regional government, or, you know, how many levels of government do we have now? People who are with logging companies, mining companies. Now, granted, that's less mm-hmm. and less. Today, petroleum companies, same thing. They need access to the land and the resources. And you mentioned De Beers with the diamonds, hydro corporations with their dams. You know, and all that. So again, if you work for a hydro corporation or a utility, you know, these are all people who benefit from keeping things as they think the way they are. What they don't get is, in point of fact, if we were sharing the resources, there is so much to go around. We should, you know, I've had one economist tell me that each Canadian should be receiving about $600,000 per quarter.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's $2.4 million a year, folks. That's what you're actually entitled to. In terms of that's how much money is being siphoned off in resources and going into other pockets. Are you getting your fair
household.
Share?
That's not per household.
No, that's per individual.
That's per individual. Every man, woman, child, and baby.
Yeah. So, yeah, a household of four. We're talking
so
about an annual income
is,
of $10 million a year. Can you live on that?
Yeah, my question is, where is this money going?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's not even staying in the country, people.
No, it's leaving the country, and part of it is funding... these massive, aggressive wars.
Yeah,
you know,
buying
these weapons are not cheap.
Sure, no, neither are those F-35 jets that are basically every country that ordered them has backed off the order except Canada.
Yeah. Well, here's one
every
for you.
Country.
Apparently, the average cruise missile contains 500 ounces of silver. They use pure silver wire in the cruise missiles. So every time one's used up, poof, there goes another 500 ounces of silver. Never mind the lives being taken. But just,
yeah, never mind the cost of the actual missile, which, from what I understand, is horrendously high.
Sure.
So, you know, they're firing off these weapons at will. We now know that the United States Department of Homeland Security has now purchased 450 million 40 caliber hollow point rounds, which are against the law internationally. The Geneva Convention outlaws the use of these weapons militarily.
Yes, but they can be used domestically.
But they can be used domestically. So why is the United States buying 450 million rounds? And that's pistol rounds. We're not talking the rifle rounds. They got 175 million of those, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 223s,
mm-hmm.
which are definitely domestic use rifles.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just one notch up on a 22.
Yeah.
But,
oh,
I mean, the bottom line is these bullets are not being meant for us or for others. They're meant for us.
Yeah. The writing's on the wall.
Sure it is. Sure it is. You look at the FEMA camp maps,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And, gee, the only ones that are listed are in the United States, they say, until you look at the map, and then you realize every Canadian military base has
yeah.
a FEMA camp attached.
Well, people, you know, I seem to have given over the control of their imagination to Hollywood. So here's the movie we haven't seen yet, or at least I don't recall, but let's just take a look at how things might be playing out. Some of us are aware of what's going on in Japan with the continuing irradiation of that country. And the talk now is that if the fuel pool at Reactor 4 comes down, that Tokyo will have to be evacuated, and they're saying it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
And now we hear that the Japanese government is in secret negotiations with China and Russia to move 40 million people off the islands and onto
the Kuril Islands, yeah.
Yeah, and China, so I'm told, has cities built that can house 60 million people.
Yes,
ready to
and
go.
They're standing empty.
Standing
Why
empty.
Were they built in advance of Fukushima happening?
Well, we're told that's just a market blip.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like the Chinese are really noted for making market blips happen, right? Right, okay.
So what's going on? Are we witnessing the first major diaspora of people, radiologically induced?
Well, you know what? Well, this could be an extinction event, at least for the northern half of the planet. This could be an extinction event.
This could be used, again, to depopulate a lot of North America, as many people say is part of the plan.
Makes you wonder, where do the elite hide when this stuff's going on? Eh?
Well, they you know, that's a great question. Do they go in space, or do they go underground, or do they have medical treatment that... is beyond anything we're aware of that makes them a lot less vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, from what I'm hearing, just for the benefit of those who are listening, from what I'm hearing, one of the best ways to survive through all of this stuff that's coming at us from sources that we can't shoot at or fight or hit or touch is organic sulfur. And organic sulfur is a super oxygenator for your system so that you have whatever immunity your body's got to throw at things like this, it's going to be peaked to its maximum
mm-hmm.
with the use of organic sulfur. Organic sulfur is not easy for Canadians to get. They can get a watered-down version of MSN. Thank you, Health Canada. You're so sweet. We love you so much. But you can order it online. And the site that I recommend for that would be sulfurforhealth.com. It's run by John Hamill from International Advocates for Health Freedom, and he is selling the sulfur hand over fist because it is a protector. So for those of you who are listening, get your hands on some of that stuff. It will at least give you your best chance. Because aside from that, we don't have anything to fight with. We can't fight chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing a good job on the smart meter issues.
Yeah.
We're watching what they're doing with the water, and I know Kevin is going to be joining us in about 20 minutes and or less, and at that point in time, he's got a lot of information on the water issues that are going on in BC and elsewhere, and of course there's the other information from Shelley Ann Clark, so it's going to be kind of interesting when he does join us, but you know, you're talking about mankind has three needs. in terms of his physical body's requirements for nutrition. We need pure air, we need pure water, and we need pure food. Those three things. And, of course, in addition to that, we need shelter, but that's another story. But in terms of our bodies, we need pure air, pure water, and pure food. They have destabilized and damaged and toxified our air to a point where, yeah, people are getting lung cancer, but it ain't from smoking anymore. It's from breathing. Okay? And, yeah, people are getting Alzheimer's and all kinds of diseases because of chemtrails. And then we're being irradiated with smart meters. And we're having all kinds of difficulties with all kinds of things because of these issues. So our pure food is gone because they've toxified literally everything processed. You don't want to touch. You want to be cooking your own food. You want to make sure it's organic if you can manage it, or at least conventional so you can wash it. But you don't want to go near GMO. If it's got a PLU code that starts with a 5 or a 9, don't touch it. Or, sorry, 5 or an 8, don't touch it. 9 is organic. 4 is conventional. And 5 and 8 are GMOs. So if you see a PLU code on a product in the market and it starts with an 8 or a 5, do not buy it. It will not help you. So we got GMOs, unlabeled foods. We got chemtrails and pollution in our air. And then we have the water issues and this Grand Canal thing and what's going on particularly in the reserves. Interestingly, they're using water as an excuse to get people off land that is going to be flooded to give other people water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, most Canadians I know of, well, we're happy to share our water. Sure we are.
Right.
As long as our hands are on the tap, thank you very much. And when it starts to do damage to our population to share with others, we're not even following the law of karma. It says do no harm, right? That includes to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we harm ourselves, we get the result of that, which is, of course, you know, they've started all this water regulation and water diversion projects in California. They've had 4 straight years of drought. Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Ask a farmer. Yeah. Ask a farmer how helpful a drought is. Oh, boy. So this is where we're at. And if you think we're in a bad shape, then you look at the reserves and you go, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is an interesting point, I'd like to raise, too, before Kevin joins us. And that is the fact that the government is basically kind of tantalizing what Kevin calls the Uncle Tomahawks with the idea of full citizenship for natives. And remember, he said a few years ago that he would deal with the natives when the treaties expire in 2013.
Hmm.
So I'm looking for some nastiness to come out of him, and it's all going to be in the way of a con. You know that's going to happen. They're going to set it up so that the general population that gets this information is going to say, well, that seems fair.
Mm-hmm.
And if they trade off, now get a load of this, if they trade off their reserve status for citizenship, that means that eminent domain can come into play on their territories because mm-hmm. it's very easy to come in and take one guy's land. It's not so easy to come in and take a whole reserve. So they're putting themselves on equal footing. But what kind of equal footing is it?
Mm-hmm.
Because our footing as individual citizens is now so undermined, our position as citizens is so totally undermined, that we're literally in the same class of citizenship as the natives are. We're that controlled. And we just don't see the chains.
Yeah.
And I heard someone say the other day, you know, if people don't move, they can't feel their chains.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be chained to a chair. If you don't move a muscle, you don't feel your chain. You don't hear them rattle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, in fact, the conditioning is going in the direction of both Hitler and Goebbels talked about it, that if you can get 80% on side, they'll take care of the other 20% themselves. This is what we're happening. I mean, if you live in a city like Victoria and you start talking about the tax-eating class, well, chances are you're talking to a tax eater, you know, be they a bureaucrat or whatever, because that's what that city runs on.
Uh-huh.
The tourism is a minor component. Yeah, exactly.
That's what happens when you're a capital.
Yeah.
Move there and all the supporters of fat cats move there, and the rest of them are retirees with no gumption.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are quite happy on their government pension carrying on as it is. So
yeah, as long as they have their garden and their climate, they're happy.
Yeah. So, in fact, what we're talking about is deeply threatening to that whole class of people.
Yes. Yes. And in the meantime, I'm looking at the native population as the only... Now, these are the people who had it together when we got here as colonials.
Mm-hmm.
They had it together. They were living in peace. They had a wonderful setup. Now, they may have been backward in terms of technology, and they may have had hardships to deal with, but these were accepted hardships. These were hardships that they'd learned to function within. They had a whole society set up. We come in there, and instead of learning from them, we impose on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now what's happening is we who were the imposers are now being imposed upon,
mm-hmm.
and they, as the ones who are experienced in dealing with all of this, we need to be united with them.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be united as brothers and sisters on this score, because it's not just them anymore.
No.
They were the lab rats. Understood.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at this point in time, the experiment's over, the game is starting for real, and who can help the white man the most is the people we hurt the most.
Mm-hmm.
And we can pray that they will. Because that longhorn house system of government, something's got to replace the system of government we've got.
Well,
there's
no question that what we're being offered here is a collapse of all of these systems and institutions, but of course they will be offered something to replace it with, and what they're offering us is everybody loves each other global government.
Uh-huh. And whereas the natives govern themselves by a real consensus, which means everybody on the same page informationally and everybody with the truth in hand making a decision towards consensus, what we get instead is Delphi technique, where they narrow the field of inquiry to the point where, regardless of what the consensus is, it benefits the elite.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they've been doing all the way along.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, problem, reaction, solution, the whole nine.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the meantime, they've demonized the natives. They've painted them as lazy. Look what they did to Attawapiskat. These people are saying, government, get your hands off. We can manage this ourselves. We don't need to be treated like children. They impose a third-party manager anyway who comes in and screws up the whole thing, now is pulled out of there again, and in the media, oh, that chief doesn't know what she's doing.
Yeah.
That chief is making too much money. What do you mean you're paying her $60,000 a year?
Yeah.
You know, so what do? They demonize these people for trying to stand on their own two feet, then come back and bitch at them for not standing on their own two feet. Now, what sense does this make? Well, none to me. None whatsoever. And in the meantime, what is happening is that the natives are not given the opportunity to speak with a listening audience. The audience's ears have been plugged.
That's right.
And unfortunately, where we should be hearing them, we should be hearing them over and over and over again and more and more and more, and realizing the connection between what they went through and what we are going through, and realizing that standing together is the only way to fight this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can sit on our hands, but, you know, to my mind, I mean, the universe speaks in sign language, and if God wants you to stop being a couch potato in your life, he doesn't tap you on the shoulder and say, excuse me, it's time to get up.
Yeah.
He lights the couch on fire. And you have a choice, sit there and burn your butt or get up and do something. And now we have to get up and do something.
I think the window of opportunity is rapidly closing.
It is rapidly closing. And when it closes, it's going to close with a clank.
Yes, it will.
You know, it's not, I don't think this window is going to close quietly.
No. Well,
you know,
again, an example of that can be found in, we live in bubbles here in North America mostly, But if you look what's been happening in the Middle East over the last few decades, look what's happening in Japan now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people
puts
of Japan are becoming aware of what's happening, and it's going to explode.
Yeah, it puts me in mind of a certain person you're probably familiar with, who wrote a little treatise called "Bubbles of Government Deception."
Mm. Yeah, no, he revealed some astonishing facts. Oh, absolutely.
Didn't he, though? That's worthy of Googling, guys. Bubbles of Government Deception. You'll find it.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Robert Menard.
Yeah.
Robert Menard.
I'm no fan of the man, but the work he's done has contributed greatly.
Exactly. I mean, the guy's a little bit of a kook. He's kind of fun to listen to, but he's a little bit of a kook. Who wouldn't be after what he's gone through? But the bottom line is, Bubbles of Government Deception, boy, does he put he puts the boots to the government on that one.
Mm-hmm.
He really did. He did fine work there, and for that we have to thank him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're absolutely right. We're living in these little bubbles of our sort of autocracies that we create in our own lives, and as long as somebody doesn't come along to pop that bubble, they can put pressure on it, they can lean on it, they can poke it to the point of almost piercing it, but as long as they don't pop it, we tend to stay inside it.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, I've been watching the Occupy Wall Street movement for a while, and of course, you know, there's little question that it's a George Soros-financed and run event. And if you talk to Kevin about it, his experience with OWS, be it in Toronto or New York or whatever, is much the same. When he brings the Christian internment camps in, you know, the residential schools to their attention, they look and go, well, what's that got to do with this?
Yeah.
Can't make the connection. They're literally, it's you know, these people are out there because they're concerned for their own well-being, their own inability to get a job or and all the rest of it. But it hasn't, you know, they haven't been able to take it further than their own bubble.
No, because they only look at the crime. They don't look at who the perpetrators are and that those perpetrators are still there. That's where they're missing the connection.
That's right.
They see the crime and they go, oh, that's horrible, but what's that got to do with me?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same way that the church has got away with having their absolution granted like a papal edict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did they call them? These dispensations, papal dispensations. When Henry VIII wanted to get married again and get divorced, the Pope gave him a dispensation. In other words, you make brownie points for the church and you can do anything wrong.
That's right.
And essentially, this is almost how the entire thing is operating.
That sounds like corrupt business practice to me.
Oh, you think? Just a bit. I know if you or I ran our businesses that way, we'd have the government on us like
And again, that's why it's so important to identify them for what they are, which is corporations. The Vatican is the original largest corporation. The Crown is a corporation. The government of Canada is a corporation. The government of Ontario, B.C. It even says so in Saanich when you drive in, you know, welcome to the corporation of the District of Saanich. They don't even try and hide the fact.
No, and it's the corporation of the City of Toronto, the corporation of the Province of Ontario,
so
the corporation
start asking
of the
some questions.
Of it.
Who's the shareholder? Who's getting the benefit from these corporations?
Uh-huh.
You know, and so in fact, is Prime Minister Stephen Harper a prime minister or is he a CEO? And did he buy his way in while we're asking questions?
Now that's an interesting one, isn't it? Or are they just going to take it out of his hide when they scapegoat him? Because you know he's going down.
Well, of course they always do. You know, that's the whole point: is meet the new boss, same as the old boss. You know, they'll probably give us this Scottish lad, Mulcahy or whatever his name is. It just doesn't matter. You know,
no,
I mean, let's give you an example.
Difference.
People in Canada like to revere the great late Jack Layton. Well, when Kevin wrote to Jack and said, Jack, I've been kicked out of England. My passport's been stamped persona non grata by UK. Can you help me out here? Because, you know, blah, blah, blah. Kevin didn't get as much as a courtesy of response from the man.
Well, you know, Jack was my MP, and I knew Jack personally for more than 20 years. He used to bum smokes from me while everybody, you know, he was pushing this Healthy Toronto 2000 thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had known him since he was on city council. He's always been, you know, some sort of governor over the area that I lived in.
Hmm.
And it used to be, and I said this to him because he was on about our sovereignty, which of course is being taken away very rapidly by trade affiliations, which are international contracts, which supersede all of our domestic law, including our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, which are all domestic law.
Mm-hmm.
These international contracts that we're signing, he knew all about that, and I confronted him on it, and he said, "Oh, you got to keep in touch with Peter Julian.
Mm-hmm.
He's our point man on that issue." Mm-hmm. Well, do you know, in all the time that Jack was in Ottawa with Olivia, at the same time, none of that stuff ever came out. They did oppose the secrecy behind CETA, but they didn't oppose the lack of sovereignty. So I wrote Jack a note, and I said, "You know, Jack, it used to be that your suspenders marked you as a man of the people, and now they just hold up your pants." So I was right angry with my own MP. Jack was, I knew him well enough. We were on a first-name basis, and, you know, as a human being, I kind of liked the guy.
Sure, he's likable.
He's a very likable guy and very caring, but I noticed that he got into that environment and boom, he's sick.
Oh, well, you know, I'm not surprised that they took him out.
No,
I can't claim that that's what happened, but it sure stinks.
Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'm a health activist. As far as I'm concerned, you get involved with the health system, you're being taken out.
Yeah. Yeah, so there must have been something there because they obviously couldn't trust him. But, you know, he did say he was a friend of the United Church.
Mm-hmm.
He
also said, after telling me that he was all up on the sovereignty issue and the international law thing, the comment after the passage of Bill C-36, which allows the health minister to take orders from foreign organizations, foreign bodies, mm-hmm. deliberately putting it in law that we have no health sovereignty,
mm-hmm.
he comes out, and instead of arguing about that, what does he say? It's nice to be on a level trading field with our trade partners. I'm going, hello? Is that Mr. Layton?
Yeah,
or did somebody clone him and reprogram him?
Yeah.
You know, because this is where everything is going. This is where everything is going. We think we have representatives. We scream at our MPs, "Why aren't you doing what we say?" They can't.
No.
The orders are coming from offshore. We do not have a constitution to rely on anymore.
Well, we never did.
Well, no, we never did. If they wanted to pull it apart, it was easy enough. But now they've got the trade groups. They supersede every domestic law we've got.
Mm-hmm.
If the trade group perceives that a law argues with what they want, our law is gone, which is why our Justice Minister, Mr. Rob Nicholson, no relation, thank God, has said to me personally on a number of occasions, your rights are subject to interpretation.
Yeah.
My response, not by you, pal.
Well, that, you know, if you look at the United Nations Charter of Rights, it says right there, the second to last thing, it says that none of these rights have any weight if they interfere with the policies and principles of the United Nations. What they're saying is we can yank your rights, you know, everything foregoing.
Exactly.
Is null and void when we say so.
Exactly.
The state has superior rights.
We signed international contracts, meaning that our parliament is nothing but a paper tiger.
Mm-hmm.
They're only there to deal with constituent issues. They are a bread and circus routine. They are a stage show for our edification to make us think that we run our own country. We don't. We're run by corporations. And at the bottom end of the spectrum, we find the very people who've been experimented on in this
Nothing
social
is with
engineering
us.
Project
Nothing is with us.
For over 100 years
mm-hmm.
and more.
I hear a voice.
Do we hear a voice?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, guys.
Oh, hi. Kevin.
Hey,
Kevin has joined us. Finally, Kevin Annett has joined us, people. So welcome, Kevin.
Thanks,
I know you haven't been listening, but Andrew and I have been kind of all over the map.
Just a
about
bit.
A lot of stuff. And one of the things, as I mentioned to you earlier, I wanted to mention was about the water issues that are going on there in the reserves right now and some of the things that are going on. And you mentioned to me that you had some information. And then I would like, with the remaining time, I would like you to talk about your work, where you're going from here, and,
sure.
You know, what we can look for and where to find you. So if you know, we've been talking about how the natives are basically being driven off the land that is that holds all the water that was given away by Mulroney in 1988.
Have you guys gone into that about Shelley-Ann Clark and all that?
A little bit, but not as much as, you know, we will do later on in when we have Shelley on herself. But, I on the native perspective, I'm looking at all these reserves. These are lands that are all reserve lands. This is where they put all the communities, all the native communities, to make them remote. And now they want what's under the land and flowing through the land. So what do you
think?
Very much.
Let me just ask, am I coming through okay? Because every time I speak, I'm getting an echo back. Can you hear me all right?
I'm coming through fine.
Okay, good. What's happening, you know, if you haven't talked about this already, I mean, it's in one sense part of the same old plan that's been going on for centuries. The difference now is that there's fewer and fewer Native people on the land. About 80% of them now are off reservation. They're not on their own territories. The remnant that are there live in conditions of what's basically banana republics, where the chiefs and their families rule the roost. They get to evict anybody they want. As a matter of fact, under Agenda 21, which I don't know if you talked about, but this Agenda 21 out of the United Nations is a plan for global depopulation, and it's really aimed at indigenous people. It uses code words like fiscal responsibility and resource sharing. But those are words being, there was a letter that went out to, there was a letter that went out to the, to give you an example, the Musqueam Indian Band in Vancouver got a letter in 2004 in February, and it basically ordered them to decrease the number of people on their membership rolls by 25%. So throw about a quarter of the Musqueams off reservation. They do that by targeting particular people, taking their children, putting them into white foster homes, especially people who are dissidents or, you know, raising questions. It's interesting, the Musqueam people were asked to do that because it's exactly the same spot where Willie and Dave Picton were bringing the remains of women they had killed and dumping them on the Musqueam site. It, you know, it's where Chief Ed John operates out of as well, who is notorious for involvement in a lot of these crimes of forcing his own people off their land. And so, you know, it's part of that plan of gradual extermination. And, of course, like you mentioned, you know, it's very much about the water and the resources as well.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier about the dams to be built in that Attawa-Piscat region and the fact that De Beers is in there mining diamonds, and it's like they're pillaging everything of value out of that land, kicking the natives out of there, saying, well, gee, you know, we can't fix your water, but we can relocate you. You know, so take the land and bring them down closer to the city or in the city itself. Take them off their traditional lands. Take them out of their culture, out of what they know, out of what they love and value. And for why? Well, because they want everything that they gave them before. Oh, well, now we see it valuable, so we're going to take it.
Right, and they also make money off natives once they're caught in the urban trap. You know how much social workers and cops and jailers and people like that make off Indians. I mean, they're a growth industry.
Oh, it's all a business, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah.
You know, and whereas in the States, most of their jail population is black people, up here we have a very high ratio of Native people who are incarcerated in this country.
Yep.
Very high percentage.
I had an interesting... On my program today, there was an interesting fellow who was in the mushhole in the Mohawk Institute, and he said actually there was a case in 1968 of a little boy, Joey Commando, who ran away and got hit by a train. His family called for an inquiry into it, and they found in the course of this inquiry, it actually led to the closing of the school. This is something I just learned today. They found that this kid had multiple bone fractures, but then they said nobody was responsible because it was the Anglican Church that ran the school. Well, in the course of that inquiry, they found graves. They mentioned, as early as 1968, they mentioned that there were graves all behind the school. This is in the court record, and yet it's never been mentioned by anybody. So it shows you how they deliberately, you know, consistently cover up this evidence, writing their own records.
Uh-huh.
It's part of that same thing, right?
Yes, and I did mention earlier, Kevin, that you came on the That Channel show with me and that I held those bones in my hand that you dug up behind that school and that I could not find any words to express the horror that I felt just holding those bones in a rubber-gloved hand. It was and I still don't have words to express it. I still don't have words. And here's court records. No. Well, why are these court records not being emblazoned? Can we get those records out? Is there some way we can do that?
Well, it's the old story. I mean, they're sitting on the records. They destroyed a lot of them. It's hard unless you know people in the system willing to help you. We've had continual roadblocks. I mean, you know, the best example recently is the National Archives sealed all the records involving Indian hospitals. The sterilization experimental programs are all now a national security secret.
And now, guess what? Shelley Ann Clark found out when she went to see the original free trade agreement up in the bunker. It's called the Diefenbaker Bunker. It's 50 miles north of Ottawa. And apparently the free trade agreement between Canada and the United States, not NAFTA, this is the original free trade agreement between Canada and the States, it has also been declared national security, and nobody gets to see it. So isn't that curious? Now we have two big, fat examples sitting right in front of us where our government is using the term national security to prevent the rest of us from knowing what in the flying blue blazes is really going on behind the curtain.
Well, they really mean who's national security. It's really a national security for the United States and for the multinational corporations who set their policies. You know,
well,
so,
isn't for us.
No.
You know, I mean, Canada doesn't have enemies. This is one thing, when I was growing up, this is what I was most proud of. This was a nation without enemies. Now, all of a sudden, we got enemies. And now they're telling us we're full of enemies. There are enemies everywhere you look. They're under every rock, and some of them are these sovereign people, and some of them are these native activists, and some of them are exposing the crimes of church and state, and some of them are exposing the crimes of Health Canada. But we're all terrorists.
Yep.
We were called by the health minister, us health activists, nutra-terrorists. If you can imagine that.
Nutra-terrorists.
Yes, that's what we were
told by
Health Canada.
Terrorizing the human body with nutrition.
Yeah. Yeah, we're terrorists because we claim to want fresh food and healthy medicine and our freedom and what to choose. So that makes us terrorists, really. That's
just
kind of interesting to me because, to me, what the government is doing to all of us, their picture ought to be right next to the word terrorist in the dictionary. That's the way I see it. But then, you know, I'm weird. I must have an oppositional defiant disorder or something.
Well, I'm sure Andrew's comment about a lot of this, haven't you, Andrew?
Yes, we've been covering quite a bit of ground, and it's, you know, it really is a full spectrum of information because it's coming from every angle.
Yeah, and I think this is the point that we were making all along. You could see the dots just falling into place. This is not just a native issue anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It is not just a native issue. It is an issue of how we as Canadians and we as citizens of the world tolerate corruption. We tolerate it. So how less guilty are we than those who actually committed the crimes? Well, even according, as Andrew so ably pointed out earlier before you joined us, Kevin, is pointing out the Rome Statute, Section 25, and it is literally a crime to pay taxes and support a government that is, that is suborning these acts. And these are things that people need to know. Now, I can't imagine a better way out of taxation than that one.
Totally. That's all you say, that you're standing on international law.
Yeah, which they are all kowtowing to right now.
Yeah. And put it in the form of a question. Seek their personal, written, signed assurance that they are not using funds remitted to the CRA to support genocide, crimes against humanity, etc.
Which they can't do.
Well, so it would seem, because I've been asking for 2 years, and they will do everything except answer my questions.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, you know, I'm asking people, get in there and ask these questions.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, or not. We'll know who you are, whether you do or you don't, right?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Failure to answer draws with it its own consequences.
Yeah.
You
and
know,
failure
and I had
to
a,
take
I had
action
a friend,
as well.
I had a friend, you'll appreciate this, okay, because this is exactly what he did to the revenue minister a number of years ago. He wrote him a registered letter, and he said, is the payment of income tax voluntary or involuntary in Canada? He gave him 10 days to respond, failing which, he said, he would, you know, conclude that he could make up his own mind. So there was no response in the 10 days, so he wrote him another one and said, well, I just want to remind you, I gave you 10 days and you didn't respond, so, you know, if you don't respond now, I'll be nice, I'll give you another 10 days. If you still don't respond, then I'll be sure that you're telling me I can make up my own mind. Well, again, mm-hmm. he didn't get a response. Mm-hmm. Well, of course not, because there was an internal memo that went out to the tax agents a number of years ago that said they can't use the word involuntary in reference to taxation. To do so was an act of treason, which went back to the Lord Nelson Hotel case, whereby the Supreme Court designated that, you know, our money is a promissory note and that no income tax is not payable under certain circumstances, i.e. you don't work for the government. So all of these things.
He's doing it the right way as well by saying, look, you know, this is what I think is going on. If I'm wrong, correct me, and then give him
exactly.
another opportunity. Sure, doesn't mean you're not going to run into some resistance along the way, but ultimately, eventually, they don't have anything to do but give up.
That's right, and that's what they did with him. He's never had a response from them, and he's mm-hmm. never filed tax since.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, never had an inquiry, nothing, and he had a six-figure income when he quit.
Good.
So you would think that they would have some interest in that, but this is the thing. You know, you expose them, by their works ye shall know them, right, Kev?
Yep.
By their works ye shall know them. Okay, so fine, let's point at their works and say, you did this, right? And this is what you meant by that, right? And this is what it means to all of us, right? And when they fail to answer, they're busted. So, you know, one of the things that I've been telling people to do is you want to break a paradigm in people's mind, ask them the right question.
Mm-hmm.
Just ask them a question they can't answer.
Yeah, Socrates did that, and of course they poisoned them.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a good thing I buy my own food and cook my own food, right?
Yeah.
Good point.
But,
hey, you know, I don't know if you guys heard this, but yesterday on TV in America, some interesting developments. For the first time in history, there's a Catholic bishop who's going to trial. So they're beginning to prosecute the church hierarchy. This William Lynn, he's a Monsignor, he covered up child rapists in the Philadelphia diocese, but he says he was following the orders of Cardinal Anthony here, bear with me, it's an Italian name, Anthony Bevilugga. Now, he's right. The cardinal has the obligation to silence and protect, people abused and to protect child rapists. That's a policy out of Rome. But what's interesting about this Anthony Bevilugga is last year he died. He claimed that he couldn't appear before there was a trial in Philadelphia, and he claimed, his lawyer said, he was too old to appear. The judge ruled, no, he's competent to appear, and then the next day he's found dead.
Uh-huh.
This cardinal.
My.
And this William Lynn, who's now standing trial, says he was following orders, as does this Bishop Robert Finn in Kansas City, who also protected child rapists. They're both facing trial. So
uh-huh.
it's really kind of a first time in America that's ever happened. And, you know, I think it for whatever reason it's happening, it's a new phase, and they're actually put in the hierarchy on trial.
Well, now, bearing in mind, let's just connect that to a little fiber of information out of Washington. We all know that Obama has now given himself the right to order the assassination of anybody. Okay? You're talking about people, and I know that you also talk in your book, in the movie, you talk about people who are disappearing and being killed or dying mysteriously because they expose information. You know, you're talking about your friends who have died mysteriously because they started pointing to the right things or the wrong things, depending on which side you were on.
Well, it wasn't mysterious. Bingo was beaten to death by cops, and Ricky witnessed it, and then he died. So, yeah, it's pretty out in the open when it comes to Indians.
Yeah, it's out in the open, but then if you point a finger at it, they all close ranks. Oh, no, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, this is essentially what's going on all over the place, is these people are getting knocked off.
Yeah, presidents have always had the power to do that. Eisenhower ordered the assassination of another head of state, Lumumba, in the Congo.
Patrice Lumumba, yes.
You know, Kennedy did. Yeah, Kennedy ordered Castro's death. You know, I mean, that's an executive privilege, but...
Yeah, well, Clinton's got 90 heads on his belt, from what I understand. More than 90 heads rolled because of Clinton, figuratively speaking, but they're all dead. And then you have the biologists who are being knocked off and the native witnesses who are being knocked off and the whistleblowers in general are being knocked off. Well, what is the general
premise
one can conclude? And the cardinal now. So
well,
it's what
an old
can
Vatican
we conclude from that?
People.
You know, what do you
people are waking
from
up.
That? Yeah, well,
people
are
waking
up
and they're
up,
scared.
And they're scared because you only take such egregious motions when you're scared.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I've always asked myself, I'm looking at these fools who think that they're better than everybody and that they can control everybody and they own everybody, and I'm wondering who's more mind-controlled, them or us?
Right.
You know, because...
Hey, Andrew, were you able to announce... Andrew, I don't know if you announced our websites at all.
We have, but another plug at this stage is probably...
The IPCCS one we have, and I promised you that at the end of the show we'd be giving those out again. HiddenNoLonger.com.
Okay, well, there's... Yeah, just so people know it. You know, people often say, well, where's your proof? It's all up online, HiddenNoLonger.com, all the documents and testimonies and our film on repentance. So be sure to circulate that one around if you're listening.
Yeah, and I did... promote the film very strongly because we were talking about, you know, bring your Kleenex because you're going to need it. You know, I mean, that film is just, it shook me to the core. I was already shaken to the core. I was there. I came to the meeting because I was shaken to the core. Then I saw Unrepentant and didn't need any more shaking because I was already mush.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's already 5 years.
I know.
Already 5 years out of date. Yeah. But we're going to – I've learned so much more since then, you know. We're trying to put it together in a new documentary.
Well,
this rabbit hole runs deep.
Yes, we can see that. And the interesting thing is that it's not just a rabbit hole. It's a rabbit warren.
Yes, it is.
And underground, all these tunnels connect. They're all part of the same agenda. So we can look at what is being done to natives, indigenous people around the world, and we can now extrapolate that to us, to the rest of us.
Yep.
And we can say with all honesty and with all certainty that we are part of that agenda, we're in it, and as long as we're complicit in it, it's going to continue. And it will stop the day we stop being complicit in our own demise.
Exactly.
This is where we are right now, and I don't think there's a better example on the planet.
And we have the power, we have the ability, we have all the tools we need. You know, we're not waiting for Spidey Man or Superman or Jesus Christ or anyone to come and save us. You know, we do this for ourselves.
Well, evil's only abounding because good men are doing nothing, and a few good men are doing something. But you know, how many holes are in this dike, and how many fingers can keep it plugged? You know. We can't all, and I know all three of us talking right now, all three of us are doing something,
sure.
You know, in an area. We've all three got our areas where we focus, but we could not sit here and discuss all this the way we have without recognizing the interconnectedness of all of this.
Well, we live in an astonishing period of time where we actually have the ability to communicate and investigate right from our homes using the internet and free telephones. We can now have access to absolutely everything. So
yeah, for
it's really
5 minutes because they just passed CISPA.
Well, sure, and that's what I'm saying. It's an interesting period of history because it looks like this window is about to close. All windows of opportunity are starting to close.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very short period of time, and that's why it's called the human race. We have an opportunity to take control of this thing and then take it back or let it go. And it's really up to all of us to make that decision and decide where we're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's a personal choice. And, you know, the time for talk is pretty much up. We're not going to have an opportunity to talk about this much longer.
Yeah, so we better get it under our belts now, real quick, because this is the only...
Let me give a plug for some more people doing some stuff. Tomorrow they're... There are these Irish guys. They're amazing people. There's a group called the Anti-Catholic Activist Network in Ireland, and people who work with our ITCCS as well, John Deegan and Jerry O'Donovan. They go into churches, especially in Dublin. They go into Pro Cathedral, and they're doing it again tomorrow. They go in when the Cardinal Brady, who is a notorious criminal and protector of child rapists, they go right into his cathedral and go up to the pulpit and stand there and talk to people in the middle of the Mass. The cops keep dragging them out, and they keep coming back in, and they keep saying, like, why are you people helping your own children getting raped by this church? You know, they're like going in and putting right in people's face. And they were just on our show briefly talking about that. So I wanted to let people know that you should follow that. We put their postings up on our itccs.org, but there's a few brave people there in Ireland right in the heart of the beast, you know, confronting the Catholic Church on their own turf.
Okay, Kevin, we're down to the last minute or so on the show. So, again, before I get to thanking you profusely for putting together, band-aiding together, cobbling together a really decent 2 hours of information, please give out your websites again. And if what you're about to say is all on itccs.org, then that's great. But give the plug right now because they're going to kick us off any minute.
Yeah, hiddennolonger.com has got all the evidence you need. Write to me at kevin_annett, A-N-N-E-T-T, at hotmail.com. I'll give you news about what I'm doing over the next few months. In a nutshell, I'm coming east again, Dee, so I'll see you. I'm working with the Mohawks with their mass grave dig.
Excellent.
In Brantford. And so anyway, that'll be going on during the summer. And I just want to thank Andrew for standing in for me, my soul brother
wonderful.
Here, and you, Dee.
Oh,
and I just look forward to talking to you more.
Well, you know, this is a continuing conversation. It, as Andrew just pointed out, it's, we've been covering a lot of territory, but this territory is united. And one of the focuses of this radio program is to try and pull those dots together for people, help them to think critically, help them to find the truth for themselves, and then gather the courage to act upon it. Kevin, I can't say enough about the work that you've done. And continue to do, and how you stick your neck out for everybody else. Bravo, my brother. I will see you soon. Andrew, thank you so much for filling in so beautifully.
Thank you.
I mean, it's been great to have you both here, and, you know, we're just very grateful here, and I'm grateful to BBS.com, BBSRadio.com, for giving us the opportunity, and I'm also glad that Christopher had a sweat lodge this afternoon, because he's going to have another story to tell us on the next show. So from all of us here at Zero Point, thank you to Kevin Annett. Thank you to Andrew Patterson. And thank you to all of you for tuning in. And we will see you again in 2 weeks' time.